This is Danny and Dusty.
Meringue-a-tang is going to be a thing.
You're not coining anything new.
With Danny Meringue and Dusty, the Fan Man Hera.
All throw some monkey sounds in there and call it good.
The old Danny Meringue pie.
Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and 1080.
Yeah, this is going to be awesome.
The Fan.
Oh, it's not a solo monkey show today. Dusty will be joining us shortly. He's down at Ducks practice through the miracles of technology. He will join us remotely here very quickly. Jeff Rust behind the glass. Right, meow.
Ciao, belly.
I just have to say, first of all, on a little random side note that nobody really is going to care about, but I'm going to mention it anyways. Brandon Sprague must be deaf. Because this every time I sit in this chair after him, these headphones are turned up to 11D. And I always have to go, good God, and crank them all the way back down.
Wow.
Because it's just like, he just must be like, huh? Yeah. At all times. What? I didn't hear you.
What's
it's because you're deaf.
Well, they always gripe about how loud Swag barks at
you
him through the monitor,
They have it down all the way.
Maybe because, that's part of the problem.
Good Lord. I put my headphones in. I was like, oh, God, that was terrifying. Like, rattled my teeth. That's a little inside baseball. I was out yesterday. Felt like twice fried crap. I'm back. I still don't feel great.
Yeah.
So if I'm lacking energy, I apologize. Them's the breaks. Hopefully this runs its course and I'm done dealing with whatever this nonsense is and we can move from there. More poignantly and most importantly, I mentioned this last year and I will mention this every year until I die probably, what today is.
Yes.
It is September 11th, 23 years ago. Selfishly, is one of the single most defining moments in my life. I enlisted in the military the next day. So just want to make sure I take a moment and acknowledge what today is. I know it's crazy thinking that it was 23 years ago because it's the most vivid like young memory that I have.
Right.
Like if you're talking about like my formative years, I remember everything about that day.
Mm-hmm.
And it's nuts to me that when I walk through the Blazers locker room, there's multiple people in there that were not born.
I know, right? That's yeah.
Scoot. Shaden,
mm-hmm.
Now Donovan.
Yeah.
Denny was not born. Denny was not born. He's 23.
Yeah.
Like, you start thinking about two, Barry. Like, most of these guys were not born.
Yeah, basically half the team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Were not born.
Crazy.
When it happened. So, but anybody that was, I mean, everybody was impacted.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody was affected the same way, but, just, you know, shout out to everybody out there. This is one of those days where, you know, you do some thinking, some memorializing, some visiting with yourself, as it were. At least I do. Like I said, it was one of, and it still remains one of the most formative days of my life. What happened the next day set up the next, really the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm.
So with that, you know, there you go.
There we go.
I mean...
Yeah, it's like, how do you pivot away from
that? I don't know
that?
How you pivot out of that.
Yeah.
You know, hey, let's talk Tyreek Hill being a D-hole. Like, you know, it's just, the cops are worse. It is what it is.
Yeah.
But good to be back. I don't like missing shows ever. It's not a normal thing for me. So my wife looked at me yesterday after I said I wasn't going in, and she was like, oh, God, you're not doing well. Like,
yeah.
No, I'm not. I feel like I'm dying on the inside, and I want to die, and it's terrible.
Yeah.
So I'm going to find a way to talk some basketball today, at least twice.
Mm-hmm. Because twice.
Or maybe I'll just put it into one segment, and then Dusty will be less mad at me. but we do – it is a rivalry week, as it were. Beavs and Ducks, so weird to see it being played in week three. And obviously, Dusty is down in Eugene right now. He's actually heading up to the booth right now where he will join us here momentarily, I would mm-hmm. imagine. And from there, we will get the practice update ahead of Civil War.
Yeah.
But beyond Civil War, we also have the Apple Cup also being played the third week of the season.
Yeah, well, and it's up against the Civil War, too. I was trying to rack my brains of if that happens terribly often, and I don't think it does.
I think you usually have, like, one evening, one afternoon, mm-hmm. or I don't think they're the same week usually. I think they're usually a week apart.
Well, I think, I mean, that's...
Isn't Civil War, wasn't it usually second to last week of the year?
I don't think so.
I can wait,
for Civil War or for the Apple Cup?
Civil War.
No, yeah. I was always the...
Is it always last
week? Yeah, always last regular season game.
Maybe it's Apple Cup is second to last?
Maybe.
I just don't feel like they've never been the same week.
Huh. I just feel like they've never been actually up against each other.
Yeah, because it always feels like TV one's window. Daytime, one's at nighttime.
Yeah.
They kind of like respect that. You know what's really interesting though is the blowing up of the Pac-12 with all of the different rights mm-hmm. and everybody, like all the different conferences wanting these West Coast teams. All of the West Coast teams just ended up on the late nighttime slot now.
Yeah.
Like, no matter who it is, it's like,
yeah.
You have the afternoon or evening time slot.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
Well, I don't know how you couldn't see that coming.
Well, Oregon, Boise State's on, and I'm like, the only game that was still on was USC, Utah State.
Mm-hmm.
It was like 10:30 at night, and that game was still going. And I'm like, how is this game still on when all USC has done is run the ball for the past 20 minutes? Like, can we,
right.
we got the institution of the 2-minute stoppage clock now mm-hmm. in college football. Can we get a running clock?
So we can fit this in under 3.5 hours.
Yeah, it's tough to figure that whole part of it out.
Yes.
So we do have, obviously, outside of the college football world, we're back to NFL right away.
Yes.
And the team du jour, the Miami Dolphins, will be up Thursday night, which I'm sure is not going to have any kind of enhanced spotlight on it because of what happened to Tyreek Hill.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure it won't get brought up at all.
No. No,
yeah.
No, especially with Raheem Mostert out and A-Chain being questionable.
Well, I know they said he came back to practice today anyway. Okay. But yeah, McDaniel was fairly mum on his he was fairly noncommittal on his availability. Looks like we have got Dusty in house here. Let me get him on.
Oh, hey, all right.
Hey guys.
Oh, hi.
Hey.
How's it going?
Oh, it's going splendid. How are you?
I'm good. I'm a little out of breath right now.
How many stairs did you climb?
I climbed a lot. I just ran from the practice field all the way up to the press box up at Autzen Stadium.
Getting your steps in.
Yeah, out of shape.
Yeah,
out of shape, guys.
The press box is not not close to the field either.
No, it is not. It is not. But I took an elevator up 5 stories. But
coward.
You know, Autzen has got the big hill. It's got. They don't have stairs. Well, they do, but I'm not even going to try to go up those. They got this big hill that you got to run up.
It's true. A yeah. Yeah. No, you do. I know. That's how I tore a hamstring.
Yeah. Yes, you did. Last time you were in this stadium, you in fact pulled a hamstring. That is a true statement right there.
You know.
How are we doing today? How are you feeling? You're feeling better, obviously.
Better, yes. But if you're watching on YouTube, you can tell I look like haggard hell. So.
Oh, good.
Yeah. No, it's apparently when like 90% of the fluid in your body leaves.
Yeah, not great.
You're just not doing great.
Yeah. Sweet.
So, yeah, but I'm not afraid of crapping my pants on the way to work anymore, so.
Oh. Okay. All right. Hope everybody's enjoying their lunch.
Yeah,
that's, you know?
That was stinky. Yeah, that was the real fear yesterday.
Okay.
I was like, you know, I could probably do the show, and then it was like, I need to be within 10 seconds of a toilet.
So, not all heroes wear capes, huh?
It was, yeah, no, it wasn't like one of those, because, you know, the drive from Newburgh to here,
mm-hmm.
there's that stretch of I-5 once you hit Twilliger. There's no off-ramp.
No,
And it was like, this wasn't a, you know, I could maybe hold this.
Yeah, no, you're not.
No, no.
I mean.
This was like, you need to be within, like, immediate access. You cannot... accidentally be like, oh, I'm safe, and then have an hour of like, oh, you're okay, and then that 10-second window of you're not okay anymore. So
no.
we graduated no. past that stage. That's,
okay.
That's
really, hey, it's the small victories in life.
Yes,
huh?
Vancouver 4 text line. You were always one stomach bug away from your desired weight. Yeah, no, it that was a real thing. I got on the scale this morning. I was like, huh, down 5 pounds in a day.
It's a great diet, apparently.
It works. It works wonderfully. I don't know if I'm. I don't want the stomach bug that's going to get me down to my desired weight. Because I had food poisoning once that I lost 25 pounds in a week, and
okay.
That almost killed me. So
okay.
I don't want to. I don't want to go down that path.
Yeah, let's not have that. Let's not have that at all.
No.
No. Nope. 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 All right. Well, the band is back together then. We're all together. Hey, I don't know what you started with at the top of this show, but...
Nothing but 9/11.
Yeah. Okay, good. Yeah, because I actually came in and they're just wrapping it up right now. When I got here down here this morning, they were doing the 9/11 firefighter stair climb here in Autzen Stadium.
Oh, wow.
And it was incredible to see, you know, you have these firefighters all geared up, walking up and down every row, every stair, hitting every stair of Autzen Stadium. And in honor of all of the men and women on 9/11, it's obviously a fundraiser component too. But I went to the 9/11 Museum in New York City and back in May. And it's one of those things that I didn't quite know and understand what I was getting myself into when we went there. But if you ever go to New York City, it is a must that you go to the 9/11 Museum. We had a moment in there where they have a picture of every person that lost their life in 9/11. And
it's tough.
Yeah, it really is. And as we were in this room, it's quiet in there. And my wife and I are walking through there, and this guy goes, "There he is." And he pointed to a picture on the wall, and he said, "That's my dad." And he was with his two kids who had never met their grandfather. Oof. And it was their first time that they had kind of seen that gravity of it. And being in that room in that moment, oh my goodness. There's so many moments about that museum, the tour, that bring back all those memories from that day. And I know that we always say never forget 9/11, but you know, this day is a day that every American that was alive will remember it vividly for the rest of their lives.
Yeah,
so,
it was one of the things we mentioned is that, you know, I brought this up in the locker room last year. Like, how many guys on the Blazers roster weren't alive?
Yeah.
It's like these guys are all kids that weren't even born when this happened. And it was just like,
yep,
the gravity of that day and what it means. And it truly is nuts.
Yep, it is. And it was, it's something that I think the thing that lasts the most in my mind and what I'll never forget is the fact that in those days and weeks following it, this country had never been closer.
Yeah.
I mean,
can we use some of that about now?
Yeah. To have that kind of rallying moment in our nation, it was, you know, your neighbors were actually your neighbors. And they weren't these strangers, and you ended up talking to people that you hadn't talked to before, and it was a wake-up call that, you know, our nation needed at that time. And you sit there and if we truly do remember it, maybe we can start galvanizing ourselves together again.
So, indeed.
Yep.
It's almost impossible to pivot out of that.
No. There is no pivot to it. There is no pivot in or out.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the way it should be, you know? You shouldn't have, like, that easy way to get in and out of a day like today. So, yeah.
Well, I'll attempt to pivot here. I don't know how deep you guys got into some Civil War stuff yesterday. We want to dive into some ducks since you're down there?
Yeah, I mean, well, and I think where we got to start this thing off is, football is a war of attrition. We say it all the time. And that war of attrition is starting to see its way into the Oregon State Beavers. Big injury on that side of the football. We'll get to that next. Danny and Dusty on the Fan. All right, Danny and Dusty with you. This is the Split Show edition. But guess what? We got the band back together on the YouTubes. We're YouTubing now. Huh? How about that? We're rolling through on the YouTube. Cameras are all up. You can see my location here. I am in my makeshift studio in Autzen Stadium, which is awesome. And Danny back in his normal position, or not your normal position. You're sitting where I normally sit on these days.
Indeed.
But back in the studios. It is a big week. It's Civil War week. We got a rivalry game, Oregon State and Oregon, in Corvallis, 12:30 kick. And last night, the news broke, and Beav fans are now saying, uh-oh. Kind of weird to see it, especially in this day and age, Tyler Volton, the left guard, or right guard rather, for the Oregon State Beavers, broke on his Instagram that he is done for the year, suffering a knee injury at San Diego State last week and torn ACL MCL for one of the nation's leading rushing teams in all of college football. Beavs rank, I believe it's fourth in attempts and fifth in yards per game rushing the football, and they lose a starting right guard for the season.
It's interesting that he himself chose the path the opposite of the San Francisco 49ers, in that he decided actually disclose an injury when he was supposed to, as opposed to not doing it at all and lying through their teeth. I don't know how much you guys touched on that yesterday. I genuinely hope the 49ers get hit with the biggest possible fine known to man.
The NFL will not investigate it.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, but they do have enough wiggle room in that he was listed as questionable, and they can, if questionable is essentially a 50-50, he will or will not play. It was, and I felt awful for Jordan Mason, because he just, you know, either he misspoke or they told him he was going to start on Friday, and you know, like then 49ers can also say, yeah, we told him he's going to start, but that doesn't mean McCaffrey wasn't going to play.
Uh-huh, sure.
And that's all they need to say.
Yeah.
And that covers their bases and it covers their rear. So I don't believe it, but at the same time, that's why the NFL is going to say, well, there's nothing much we can do about it. But as it pertains to Oregon State, I mean, this is a big one. Flavio Gonzalez is going to step in. He's a senior offensive lineman, redshirt senior, and he did come in and he did play against San Diego State. And, the problem with Oregon State right now is when Jonathan Smith left and you saw the transfer portal exodus, you saw so many players leave, that cuts away at your depth. And Oregon State has been, to some, surprising, but to anybody and everybody that's been watching, wildly consistent in the way that they have played, especially on both sides of the line of scrimmage in the first 2 weeks. To take that hit in your depth when your schedule is ramping up and you are going to be playing the best teams on your schedule in the upcoming weeks, this is a big hit for Oregon State, because having this happen during week two game against San Diego State, now your depth on the offensive line is razor thin, and they can't afford to have more guys get dinged up and more guys nicked up. And I think that this is a big injury for the Beavs. And if not for this week, moving forward and over the course of the season.
Yeah, this isn't, Oregon State's not operating like a lower division team with 45 scholarship players, but the difference in drop-off when you're one of those teams in that transitionary period, it can be dramatic. Mike Gundy at Oklahoma State mentioned, he lost one of his linebackers, and, the quote he had after the game when he had a guy come in and a transfer to replace him was, "Do you want me to be honest, or do you want me to be coach speak?" And basically dropped a, "I'm being honest, we got him because he was cheap." And it's like, That's the reality, I think, if you're looking at certain things around in the transfer portal and mobility and depth. There's a constant juggling act of what you want to do and how you want to do it. And Oregon State's in that spot right now where they can't reinforce, they can't buttress that and have that. I mean, hell, Oregon is dealing with it, and they have significantly more resources and the better potential to address those things. And it's something that they're dealing with. So it kind of paints the perspective of where the Beavs are at and how detrimental this can be to them. Like, it's great that they were able to keep Josh Gray, but, you put Fuaga in the NFL.
Talese Fuaga has been playing. He played lights out week one.
Exactly. And so you're already struggling to replace one guy, and then you're struggling to replace other guys that have left. And what the monster kid from Colorado has come in and been above board. I think it's one of those situations where if you're the Beavs, you're just kind of hoping and praying. But on the flip side, Flavio Gonzalez is one of the most kick-ass names I've ever heard in my entire life. And so I'm just going, I'm going to root for the guy because his name rules.
Dude, one of my best friends from college, his name was Kyle, and his parents almost named him Flavius. And
they should have.
Yeah, I still think that that was the wrong call to go Kyle instead of Flavius. Flavio Gonzalez is a phenomenal name. And this guy's been, I mean, he's gone through it, man. He has been through two junior colleges. He, you know, played last year at Oregon State. And I think it was six games. He's a guy that did stick around, and he's played really well through the first 2 weeks, albeit in limited snaps. Guy, it's not like you're throwing in a guy who has not played yet, right? He's played in about half the snaps this season for Oregon State, and he's an above-average run blocker. He is, through the first couple of games, he's been solid in pass pro, but still not one of your anchors. I think Pro Football Focus had him graded out as, of offensive linemen, he was the lowest graded in pass protection of any of the offensive linemen. But again, line grades on Pro Football Focus can be a little bit misleading, mm-hmm. because they don't know the intricacies of calls and protection slides and all of that.
Expectations.
What they're doing is guy versus guy, mm-hmm. and saying and basically guessing on what they were asked to do in that protection. But on the same side and the same token, you know, he has played well enough through the first two games. Here's the deal, though. As a 60-minute game goes on and you have a guy who's already playing about half your snaps so far this year, what does that depth look like? Kyle DeVan's work is going to be cut out for him this week and the rest of the season when you start dabbling into that depth a little bit more and a little bit more, because now you don't have your rotations get thinner. This is your first guy up. I mean, we've been seeing this with Oregon for the first couple of weeks, right? When you have two guys on the interior offensive line that are out, and Dan Lanning has said it, like, yeah, we always rotate guys in. That's the thing about line play now. It's like you don't just stick the same five uglies out every single play for an entire game. Nobody really does that anymore.
It's really interesting that the rotation of it. They were talking about that on God, was that Friday night's game? It might have been Friday night. It might have been the Eagles Packers, or it was the Sunday night game. I can't remember which one it was, but they were talking about how in the past you had, you know, a DB that might stay on the field for basically the entire game, and then you might have, you know, a linebacker that would stay on the field for the entire game. Or you know, 90%+ of snaps. He's like, and they mentioned nobody does that. Like, no. Nobody. Like,
tackles will.
It was the 49er game. It was Monday night because they were talking about Fred Warner. He is one of the only guys who stays on the field at all times. Basically, plays all snaps.
Well, and especially on the interior offensive line now, because you know you have a left tackle. And your left tackle is, you've got one side that you're worried about, right? You're not getting twists and stunts coming from both sides and getting banged up in that regard. But also, defensive line rotations, offensive lines have had to adapt to what defenses are doing, which is you rotate rushers in to have fresh legs in. It's like hockey line changes, right? If there's an extended drive, you're going to get fresh legs in. And offensive lines, you won't do it in the middle of a drive, but you've got to be comfortable enough to say, all right, how do we keep our guys fresh and keep our legs fresh throughout the entirety in the course of a game? If a defense is doing it, offenses have adjusted and adapted to that as well. You look at where Oregon State's been so far this season. Josh Gray, he doesn't move. He's not a guy that you're going to rotate in and out. He is an anchor at left guard. Volton has played 88 snaps this year. Van Wells has played 98 snaps at center. You've had Vincic, the backup center, has played 56. Flick Gonzalez has played 77. And then your tackles, you've kind of had a little bit of a revolving door. Lichtenhahn has played 114. Stark has played 97 snaps. Strand has played 87 snaps. You're seeing that rotation on the Oregon State offensive line. The thing that you got to keep your radar up on, though, they've only played three guards. And now you only have two, right? Mm-hmm. So how does this look over the course of the rest of the season? I don't know. I think that in the immediacy, I don't think it's as dire of a situation because you've played Gonzalez at in a bulk of games. He's played about half of your offensive snaps already this season. So if he's playing half of your offensive snaps, you obviously feel very comfortable
There's
with him.
There's some faith there.
he was a name that just kept popping up over fall camp and all that stuff too. So in the immediacy, I don't think it's that big of an issue or smash the panic button if you're Oregon State. But as the game wears on Saturday, and as the season wears on, that depth in the war of attrition is really going to be tested for the Beavs moving forward, because you have to have those bodies in. You really do. And now you're down to two guards that you've played in games through the first 2 weeks of the season. We'll see what happens come Saturday and who the next man up is in that rotation. 503-864-6326. That be the Vancouver Ford text line. Your dollar goes further at Vancouver Ford. They treat you right before, during, and after the sale. Visit them online at VancouverFord.com. You mentioned Talese Fuaga. He was one guy that really did stick out across the NFL, and it's not just a local bias. He was one of the 10 best rookies in all of the NFL in week one of the NFL. We'll talk about that after Rust with SportsCenter. We're talking about Oregon State's offensive line taking a hit with Tyler Volton, ACL-MCL injury. Right before rivalry week when they take on the Oregon Ducks. In Corvallis, 12:30 kick. You can hear it right here on The Fan. I believe the pregame festivities on The Fan start at 6 a.m.
That is correct, sir.
Good Lord.
Yeah, Sinner and the Saint waking up early, getting you ready for a kickoff between the Ducks and the Beavs. I'm really looking forward to it. But one thing that both of these teams, I think through the first 2 weeks, we've noticed and seen, it's been quite apparent. A lot of NFL talent, really damn good players for both Oregon and Oregon State, moving on to the National Football League. And CBS Sports released their top rookies from week one of the NFL's regular season. And both of these teams were represented on that list. Number 10 was Jaguars wide receiver Brian Thomas Jr. Now, I don't know. How much of that game did you watch? You watch any of that game?
I checked in a little bit just to check out the old J-Eggs.
Did you see the Brian Thomas touchdown?
I did not.
He ran like an over route in the red zone. And so he crossed the hash and he caught it probably like halfway in between the opposite hash and the sideline in the end zone. And Trevor Lawrence let the ball fly when he was like in the middle of the field.
Okay, yeah, I just saw it. Yeah, and he just throws him open in the corner.
Effortlessly. Brian Thomas just like scampers over and just bloop, touchdown. Very similarly, there was a lot of times that I was watching that game going, he is so open. Why aren't they throwing him the ball? Just missed. Quarterbacks week one, rough week.
Not great.
Dallas getting Marshawn Neyland coming in at number 9, defensive lineman. He had, of all rookies, had the second highest pressure rate. So good for him. Number 8, though, was Bucky Irving, running back, Tampa Bay Buccaneers, coming in. Former Oregon Duck. And you remember hearing this over and over again. Todd Bowles waxing poetic on Bucky Irving and his production throughout the preseason and camp.
You know, he feels like the kind of player that fits well with what the Bucs are kind of about now, particularly with Baker and how they're playing. Did you see the clip that came out of week one of Baker talking about Mike Evans?
No.
So there was a clip came out where he was mic'd up, and he said, if they don't bleeping double cover Michael Thomas, I'm throwing it, or my Mike Evans, I'm throwing it to Mike. And it was like, that seems like Bucky seems like the perfect kind of utility back to just take advantage of that. As teams roll coverage, as teams load up to take away Mike Evans, he is the kind of guy who can run underneath, but also be viable in the passing game. And I think he's a really, really, really good scheme and personnel fit for what the Bucks want to do.
But Bucky Irving reminded me so much of Ashton Jeanty, who we saw on Saturday at Boise State. He is definitely not 5'9". They are just little balls of muscle. Do not ever go down on the first contact.
Just bounce it off.
They run through tackles. They have incredible vision and are those like one cut backs that they will commit. And once they find their seam, they're committed to it and they're not going to dance back and forth, but they will run you over and snatch your soul. The only difference that we saw between, you know, Ashton Jeanty and Bucky Irving is Bucky Irving never had 25 carries in a game.
Yeah. And I remember last year saying, and I knew how crazy it sounded because of how good Bo was, but how important Bucky was. I said,
no doubt.
I think it was like week 7 or week 8. I was like, I think Bucky might be the most important cog to this offense because Bo is going to do what Bo is going to do. But if Bucky Irving got going, it just opened everything up for everyone else because he had the capacity to do everything else, to fill in all those different places, to get you the hard yards between the tackles, to break a, you know, an explosive on the edge, to catch a pass out of the backfield. He's that running back that can be on the field that you don't need to switch out, you know, on third downs. He's a guy that you can trust in pass, bro. And I think those are the kind of things where you look at that Tampa Bay team. We talked about this in kind of like previewing this season. This Tampa Bay team doesn't have the most talent in the world, but they're really good basically everywhere. Like, Baker's a top 10 and probably 10th best quarterback in the league. They've got Mike Evans, who's is Mike Evans the new Larry Fitzgerald, the most underrated wide receiver that's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer?
Yes, I'll give that to you because I will say yes, because now he would fit that bill, but he's still not the level of Larry Fitzgerald. Is like a top 10 receiver all time.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, I'm just saying, like,
right? No, I'm not.
His name just never comes up when you talk about the, everybody wants to talk about Jamar and Justin and
you're
Stephon
right.
Diggs. And I'm like, and there's two guys in the league that I would take over him. That's it.
And this is, but this is the entirety of his career too, though. Mike Evans has never been seen as the guy who's like the number one receiver in the National Football League. But you're right. He is like a first ballot Hall of Fame talent, and production wise, he fits that mold as well.
He's never had less than 1,000 yards in a season.
Yeah, he's freaky good. And he's had some terrible quarterbacks.
That's what I mean. Like, in Tampa Bay, he's never had less than, his career low is 1,001 yards.
Yep. And but, look, they also got Jalen McMillan from UW, too, who's going to be really stinking good in the NFL this year. Turns out those receivers just weren't good in college. They're really good NFL receivers,
no way.
Too.
Oh, my gosh.
Because Odunze, McMillan, and Polk in New England. They're kind of fitting into this mold, too, of like, hey, Rome Odunze is going to be a number one in the NFL. Jalen McMillan was the number two on that team, but he is like, you always said, yeah, he could be a number one. Well, it turns out he goes to the NFL, and it's like, yeah, he's a number two on his team, but he could be a number one eventually. And then Jalen Polk is, God, that guy's really good, and he's the third best receiver on his team last year. This year, it is New England doesn't have any receivers, but that Polk kid probably is going to be a really good receiver. So turns out Washington's receiver, impressive.
Not bad.
Very impressive. But Bucky Irving coming in at 8 on the list of rookies in week 1 of the NFL. This should shock nobody. Called this shot because they have a void of talent, but Ladd McConkey led the Chargers in receiving in week 1. Now, he only had 39 yards, but 5 catches. He is going to be Justin Herbert's safety blanket in LA with the Chargers. So take note, put that in the back of your mind. Kamari Lassiter of the Texans, a corner, he comes in at number 6. I don't know why he's on there, to be quite honest, but he allowed one completion in his debut.
There you go.
I think that's pretty good.
Pretty good.
Steelers center Zach Frazier is number 5 on the list. And then you have former Oregon State Beaver, Talese Fuaga, Saints left tackle. Think about this. This is what the CBS Sports writes about Fuaga. He's one of two rookies unbeaten in pass protection in week 1. Only 2 of them.
Yeah. And the other ones at the top of this list.
But take into consideration they were playing the Panthers and Derek Brown got hurt.
Yes.
But the Oregon State product, Talese Fuaga, he is an insane talent at left tackle. And Oregon State, you'd never had to worry about what was going on the edge because of Talese Fuaga. And then on the left side of your offensive line last year, Joshua Gray, Talese Fuaga, those two guys, that's one thing that you, if you're an Oregon State fan, you've got to hope that whatever that formula was that Jonathan Smith had built up, that really, and quite honestly, he got pieces of from Chris Peterson up at Washington. He got pieces of it from Mike Riley in Oregon State. It is what the metrics that you look for when you say, all right, this is a frame of a guy that other teams are overlooking, but we can develop into, you know, a high caliber college and NFL offensive lineman. Because if Trent Bray and then Kyle Devan, their offensive line coach, and Ryan Gunderson, their offensive coordinator, can continue to find those guys, develop them, that is going to be what sustains Oregon State football. It's what Gary Anderson obviously didn't do in his time in Corvallis. But Fuaga was one of those guys that he came in raw. They made him into and helped. I mean, they didn't make him into it. He made himself into it. But they got him to a level where he was one of the best offensive tackles, not just rookies, one of the best offensive tackles in the NFL in week one coming out of the gate. Granted, it was against the Carolina Panthers, but it's the National Football League. Talese Fuaga was an absolute dude. Third on this list, Xavier Worthy. Turns out really fast, really good. Patrick Mahomes likes to throw him the ball.
It's useful to be dumb fast. Now, you don't have to worry about getting pressed if nobody can ever put their hands on you.
No, and as I said, when that 7-on-7 clip came out, Andy Reid's going to motion the you-know-what out of that guy. Mm-hmm. You will not be able to touch him. He's going to have a – he'll either be off the ball and have a yard cushion, or they're going to be moving him all over. Good luck slowing him down off the line of scrimmage. Number two, Joe Alt, Chargers. We talked about Joe Alt. He went one-on-one not against the Carolina Panthers. Rather, he went one-on-one 11 snaps head-to-head with Max Crosby, one of the best pass rushers in the National Football League.
Who's relentless.
And did not allow a single pressure in his debut.
That's pretty damn impressive.
I would say so.
And they said that Alt still needs to work on stuff.
And look,
like, as far as technique. And it's like, oh, okay. So apparently just being a 6'8", 330-pound dude is really useful.
We talked about this yesterday when you were out. But we regard Trent Williams as the best left tackle in the NFL, right? Mm-hmm. Just to, like, pound home how hard it is not to allow a single pressure, Trent Williams didn't allow a pressure all game against the Jets. That was the first time he'd done that since week three of 2022.
And he's
the best left tackle in the NFL.
Yeah. Not a very common thing to have happen.
No, and we had two rookies this year in Fuaga and Joe Alt who did it week one.
Not too bad.
That's pretty damn impressive, man.
Number one on the list, I think, is a little bit surprising in Jared Verse, mm-hmm. because he was a guy, I think, that went kind of unnoticed and unsung. I mean, not unsung as a first round, you know, top half of the lottery or top half of the draft pick, but he was a guy that typically when you talk about pass rushers, particularly in the first round, You think of guys that are going to be immediate impact. They come with a name, you know, it's whether it's the Jadeveon Clowneys of the world or Javon Kearse or, you know, the big time names that kind of come with pass rushing. And Verse was not one of those guys. Like, he was looked at as like, yeah, he could put it together, he could be special, but he wasn't regarded on that same level enough to where you'd take him in front of, you know, what would he end up going in the draft? Was it 11? No. God, I can't remember what he was picked at. No, he was 12? He was in the teens.
I don't know.
Anyways, my point being, he went out there and he had one of the highest pressure rates of, like, the guys with volume in week one.
Yeah.
That's a hell of a start, particularly for a Rams team that's missing Aaron Donald. Where now opponents can divide their attention. It's more of a divide and conquer situation as opposed to throwing a guaranteed double, if not triple team at Aaron Donald.
19th. He went 19th overall.
Yeah.
Yeah. And look, and he may be getting a bump based on the fact that everybody was so interested in what their pass rush would look like in LA without Aaron Donald. And when you have a guy who performs the way he did, they're like, no, that's pretty damn impressive. And it was. Because think of who he was going up against. He was going up against one of the best offensive lines in the NFL. Full stop. The Detroit Lions have one of the best offensive lines in the entire NFL. And this rookie came in and he got pressures. Now, he didn't make life a living hell on Jared Goff. But at the same time, he affected so many plays in that game that that's exactly what you want to see. And I think he gets a bump because of replacing Aaron Donald. And everybody was so interested to see what that looked like. And two, the offensive line he went up against, it wasn't like he was going up against the Carolina Panthers, right? Or the New York Giants. He was going up against the Detroit Lions. And that offensive line is dominant. He's from Florida State. Florida State, I bet, could use him right about now.
Yeah, no, they did really well in the transfer, though.
Yeah. Have you seen the latest of the criticisms about Florida State and what's coming out on them?
No.
Yeah. Let's get to that coming up, because this is a doozy, folks. This is why Florida State fan, big mad right now. Mm. Danny and Dusty on the Fan. This music probably fits for this story because you want to have some drama? Talk about the drama down at Florida State right now. Tallahassee, they're going through it.
Is it drama, though, if it's always drama? This feels like this is like calling drama on Love Island. It's like that's what you're tuned in for.
Yeah, Florida State, they're a really interesting university as a whole. Just think about it. Like, they are fighting to get out of the ACC because they feel like they deserve a bigger piece of the pie. They deserve a seat at the table. The SEC reportedly is like, we don't want them. We don't want them here. But they're like, we're gonna get out. We're going to find ourselves a home because we're better than this. We're bigger than this. Last year, we got hosed out of the playoff. This year, they're 0-2 to start the season, and they look disjointed at every turn. And Mike Norvell, their head coach, who wildly successful at Memphis, was seen as like this one of the young, brightest minds in all of college football when he was at Arizona State. And think about the talent that Mike Norvell has surrounded himself with. And this is something that I don't think we talk about enough in the world of coaching because of guys like Nick Saban, who has his coach's rehabilitation tour year after year after year. Go through the list of guys that Mike Norvell has had as a coach on his staff. Dan Lanning. Mm. Kenny Dillingham, mm-hmm. Memphis head coach Ryan Silverfield, mm-hmm. NAU head coach Chris Ball, Buffalo head coach Pete Lambeau.
Haven't all these coaches done well everywhere else too?
Southern Miss head coach Will Hall. He's had six head coaches that, and yes, they have done well. And they've all been young, bright coaches. Like, he has an eye of young talent and evaluates them and brings them along and then says, go spread your wings and fly. And they do, mm-hmm. right? But there always comes a time, and for most head coaches outside of Nick Saban, where when that turnover happens again and again and again, and eventually you don't hit home runs every time. Sometimes you hit a single. Sometimes, hell, you may strike out on a guy. But that isn't the problem with Florida State right now. They have continuity, chemistry issues abound at Florida State. Their fan base all fired up, though, because the video that surfaced yesterday of the quarterbacks going through like mesh and read progressions, and in the background you see two players chasing each other with squirt guns. Did you see this?
No.
Yeah. And so this is like,
oh my God,
after practice work. And you have the quarterbacks in a team that is just struggling like all get out. And this is where Florida State fans are at right now, though. They don't want to see anybody having fun at any time, right? But there were two players in pads chasing each other with super soakers behind the quarterbacks.
It's full on Coach Boone. Football was fun, wasn't it? Not anymore, though, right? I mean, that's what this is.
Yeah.
But
their fan base is, they're in a pretzel right now.
I mean, there's...
They loved Mike Norvell last year. They hate him this year.
I mean, there's just no... I would love to see the explanation of why they've lost to Boston College and Georgia Tech, considering the talent they have. And you can go, well, DJU is not this. It's like, okay. Yeah. When we're looking at the talent levels of both teams that they've played, and you can talk about coaching and scheming and everything else that goes with that, it should have been so overwhelming that it should not have been a problem. And yet,
yeah,
here they are in this situation. It just doesn't – I can't wrap my head around it. It doesn't make any sense to me.
No, and sometimes you just have chemistry issues, right? Chemistry is a massive, massive part of football, and that continuity of guys working alongside each other and with each other, man. It's a really tough thing, and this is going to be, I've always said, like, we are going to see at some point the transfer portal is going to, where you're going to have the cautionary tales of guys that enter and they don't find their way out. They don't find that new home. You're also going to have a lot of coaches that commit to the portal and it doesn't work out. And they say, all right, we need to rethink and reframe how we build our roster moving forward, because the best teams in college football fill holes through the portal. They develop, they grow, and they retain their own talent. That's what the best programs in college football do. That's what Georgia did. That's what Texas has done. That's what Ohio State has done. You recruit, you grow, you retain. And then you fill any holes, because you don't bat 1,000 in recruiting. You don't bat 1,000 in the portal. You fill your holes through the transfer portal. I think that's where we're going to eventually get to. So, all right, 1 hour down. Hour number two, Tyreek Hill. He is calling for the firing of the police officer who arrested him. Mm. But there's more. Danny and Dusty on the Fan.